This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Georgia, on my mind, and changing the landscape for Black power.
I sing for Georgia. This whole sweet song, keep Georgia on my mind.
Georgia, on my mind, and changing the landscape for Black power, with Cliff Albert, co-founder, executive director of Black Voters Matters Fund, writer and radio talk show host. Cliff Albert is a co-founder of Black Voters Matters Fund and BVM Capacity Building Institute, which builds community and organizational capacity related to Black voting power. Cliff and the BVM team have been traveling throughout 7 southern states in the blackest bus in America. That's what they call it, energizing voters and exposing voter suppression. Black Voters Matter aims to increase power in our communities, they say. And this year, the organization is doing just that through We Got Power, a bus tour spanning Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, North Carolina, and California. Its purpose is to connect folks and remind people in the Black communities that they have power, and they have power to stop those that use that power against them. Cliff Albert.
Perhaps my first question is, going back to what was particularly irksome to me, is that a lot of the liberal cable media have suggested that, in fact, the Latinx vote did not come through as they expected for the Democrats, mm-hmm. and have castigated them, and similarly, that some number which they are suggesting, I don't know where they get statistics from, if indeed it exists at all, that 20% of Black men otherwise supported Trump. So your thoughts on what seems to me to be the diminishing of the significance of the Black and brown votes that I believe clearly took Biden to victory over the Trump Republican juggernaut?
Yeah, you know, thank you for asking that, you know, because it's really interesting, because it's really a double-sided attack, right? On the one hand, you've got people that are trying to point out that lack of support for Joe Biden, right? And then on the other hand, what they're also doing that takes it even deeper is what they then say is that even in terms of the congressional races and the Senate races, what they're really doing is they're blaming Black and brown issues. Defund the police, or, you know, progressive calls for health care, or whatever it may be, but they're really blaming Black and brown progressive issues. You know, they may say the progressive part of the party, but when they say that, they're really talking about Black and brown folks. And so what they're saying is that, you know, not only did we not support Joe Biden enough, but, oh, and by the way, it's because of you all that we lost some of these seats. Both of those are incredibly wrong and, in fact, dangerous, because at the end of the day, you know, it is Black and brown voters that put Joe Biden over the top, regardless of what you may say. Now, there's a debate to be had about Florida, and there's some discussions that we got to have about some segments of the Latinx population in Florida. We've known for some time now that Cuban-Americans, you know, have a certain political perspective that can sometimes be overly conservative and problematic. But, you know, it showed up also in some other populations in Florida. There's a discussion that needs to be had about Florida and about the diversity of the Latinx vote. But this is what we know. It's brown folks in Arizona along with our indigenous brothers and sisters that I don't want to leave out, right? But it's brown folks, indigenous folks in places like Arizona and New Mexico who took Joe Biden, in Nevada, that took Joe Biden over the top. It is without a doubt black voters in places like Detroit that took him over the top in Michigan. And not even just Detroit. Look at Kalamazoo. Look at Flint. Look at some of the other cities in Michigan that don't get enough attention. Black voters that helped take him over the top in Michigan. Black voters in Milwaukee that took him over the top in Wisconsin. Black voters in Philadelphia. They're so frustrated. They saw that lead that Trump seemed to have just dwindle and literally disappear over a couple of days, largely because of the black voters in Philadelphia that came out in massive numbers to support it, as well as black voters in Pittsburgh and again, other parts of the state that don't get a lot of attention, right? And so this narrative that, you know, that somehow we didn't come out enough for him, you know, that, oh, there was a decrease in black support from, you know, 94 or whatever it was in 2016 down to 90. That's still larger than any other group. Like, you can't give the suburbs credit for helping Joe Biden win when at the end of the day, not only did Trump get a majority of white voters, he actually got a larger percentage of white women this time than he did in 2016. So for all this talk about the suburban moms and how they're leaning Democrat and all that, he still got a majority of white voters in general and a larger percentage of white women than what he got in 2016. You can try to shape the narrative all you want, but the numbers don't lie, right? Black voters, once again, and led by black women, you know, have once again, and not even just black women as voters, but black women as strategists, but once again have saved this party, this candidate, and in so doing, literally have saved this country from another 4 years of death and destruction. And if you think that's hyperbole, you need to look only as far as the increase in COVID numbers to know that, once again, black voters and brown voters and others have literally saved the country. So yeah, you'll get that narrative coming out of the moderate conservative wing of the Democratic Party, but at the end of the day, they got to be better and be more responsive and stop running away from the fact that they're on issue after issue that they're running away from. The numbers show the majority of Americans want, you know, progressive policies like Medicare for all. The majority of folks believe at some point during the summer that Black Lives Matter, right, and that we need the restoration of voting rights and all these other issues that they view as being problematic. If they stay true to those issues, they'll continue to be able to get the kinds of victories like what we've seen in this election and flip states like what we just saw happen with Arizona and Georgia, led again by Cliff, black and brown voters.
Cliff, let me take this to the other end of the spectrum, if you will, and that is the people in what may loosely be characterized as the nationalist community or members certainly of the left or of parts or groupings within the left community who say, well, electoral matters don't. They don't. That's just capitulating to and misleading people, capitulating to, in Biden's case, a neoliberal agenda. And so electoral matters and electoral power don't really matter. And, of course, within that, they're inherently negating the suppression of the black vote, or at least they're turning a blind eye to it because that's not their issue, because electoral politics are not a tool to use, and most definitely voting for a neoliberal, if you will, administration is not the way to go. How do you respond to them in the context of black empowerment and power to the people, for that matter?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's an argument I know well because, quite frankly, it's an argument that I used to make. I've not always been somebody that was interested in electoral politics. In fact, I was kind of the same camp of being against electoral politics, that we're just reinforcing a system that we know wasn't designed for us. So I get it well. And in truth, there's not a day that goes by, and especially not a week that goes by, that I still don't have some of those same feelings, right? Because we see the problematic parts of this electoral system, right? But here's the deal, right? And there's this whole theory that says, you know, that in fact, there are people that believe sometimes it's better for us when the conditions are more harsh and more oppressive, because then we'll turn away from, you know, some of these electoral systems and we'll have revolution. Here's the deal. And I've lived in the North. I'm born and raised in the North, from the Bronx, New York, and I've lived in the South for the last 22 years. I've lived in urban areas. I've lived in rural areas. You can't show me a community that can believe in the power of self-governance, right, or the power of independence, or the power of revolution. You can't have a view of revolution and self-governance if you don't fundamentally believe that you've even got the power to get a stop sign at the end of the street. At the end of the day, our folks have got to believe and see our power in being able to impact our daily lives, even on some very small issues like a stop sign or about our schools or about our housing, right? If we can't see and believe in that, then we can't see in these other visions that we may have of where we ultimately want this society to get to. Now, I am no fool. We say all the time at Black Voters Matter, me and my dear friend Latasha Brown, we always say our liberation is not going to come from this electoral system. We know that, right? At best, we're often talking about harm reduction when we talk about these electoral matters, right? But harm reduction is still harm reduction, right? It still means something. You can't say that who's in leadership doesn't matter. Tell that to the person who over the past 9 months has lost somebody to coronavirus. Or tell that to the person who's lost somebody to police violence, or to somebody in Flint who's lost somebody because of poisoned water, right? You can't tell them that who's in leadership matters, that who their mayor is, who their governor is, who the president is, doesn't matter at all for their lives, right? So we got to recognize it's not where our liberation is going to come from, but within every oppressive system, there is some amount of space for folks to organize in a way that is self-affirming and can lead to the ultimate liberation. In every oppressive system, you have that. Even in slavery, there was space for us to organize. Even in the midst of slavery, we still had the space to go off in the woods, to teach somebody to learn how to read, to create our own institutions and to have a jumping of the broom. In every oppressive system, there is some amount of space that you are allowed, that you are given, or that you create for yourself that allows you to do the building that will lead to the ultimate liberation. There's some amount of space in a slavery system that you have where you're always able to organize, and then what you do is you organize a slave revolt that will ultimately take down the system. The question is, with this electoral thing, is how does this serve us to increase that space, that organizing space, that space to breathe, so that we can continue to do the things that we know is ultimately going to get us to our ultimate liberation? Will we have more space for that under somebody as imperfect as he is, under a Joe Biden, as many issues as we may have with that? Will we have more space under somebody like him than under somebody like Trump? A fascist, somebody who is on a daily basis literally trying to kill us? Will we have more space under one versus the other? Not, that's the question. It's not whether one of them is perfect. Neither one of them is perfect. I ain't never voted for a perfect candidate. I ain't never met a perfect person. So the question isn't whether or not one of them is perfect. Which one of them creates the situation, creates the organizing space for us to do the work that we have to do to get closer to our true liberation? That's the question. If you ask that question, then there could be no doubt what the answer is. Is the electoral the end-all, be-all? Heck no. But does it allow us the space to do the continued organizing and power building that we need to do? Without a doubt.
Cliff Albright, co-founder of Black Voters Matter Fund. So the agenda ahead, the agenda utilizing the electoral arena to enhance the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, if you will, of the African-American voter family, the African-American community. Where do you go from here, and how do you, what would you say the greater agenda is utilizing the electoral arena for the community people of African ancestry?
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate agenda is for us to be able to have control over our political destinies and over the decisions that impact our daily lives. So that means that our work, we say it all the time at Black Lives Matter, there's no such thing as an off year. So in 2021, we're going to be just as busy. Are there going to be some other groups that, you know, feel like they can take off the year and take off and believe that, you know, their job is done until the next presidential or until the midterm elections in 2022? Yeah, there are folks like that, but that ain't us. And so in 2021, our work continues. Heck, even before 2020, right now as we speak, even as we're getting ready for these two Senate seats in Georgia, we've got some friends and allies and comrades in Chattanooga, Tennessee that are organizing a petition ballot because they're trying to get community oversight of their local police to deal with police violence issues. So we're dealing with that simultaneously. The local issues to us are just as important as those top of the ticket, you know, national issues. That's really where our sweet spot is. And so that's where a lot of the long-term power building has got to take place. The truth of the matter is even the situation that we're in nationally right now has not just been because of presidential elections. Republicans for decades have been better than Democrats and better than progressives at organizing at the local level and taking over local control of, you know, county commissions and state legislatures, and then once they get the state legislature, that's how they gerrymander, and they do, and gerrymandering, they're able to take control of congressional seats, and then, you know, and then all that bubbles up. So we didn't get into this situation that we're in overnight, and we didn't get into this situation we're in just because of the presidential. It's been a long-term strategy that the other folks, those who mean us harm, those who are anti-black, it's a long-term local-based strategy that they've engaged in. We've got to be just as effective at doing the reverse, having a very local, bottom-up, 365 days of the year, and no such thing as an off year. That's got to be the strategy. And so that's the work that we've got coming up. And part of that involves holding folks at all of those levels accountable. So that's from Joe Biden to these Senate seats if we want them, on down to city council. It's we believe that it's not just about putting in black faces, but we've got to rethink this entire political process. We've got to change it from a process where somebody comes to us telling us what their job is going to be, right, where they write their own job description. They tell us what their agenda is going to be, and then we're forced to vote for them. That's a backwards process. We believe in flipping the process so that the people control the agenda, so that the people who are doing the hiring are the ones that are writing the job description, right? We believe in creating different structures like people's assemblies, like what they're using in Jackson, Mississippi, and some other places, that fundamentally changes our folks' relationship to power and to decision-making. That's the ultimate goal, not just to put black faces in high places, but to rethink and change and transform the entire way that we engage in this political process.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask where on the historic line, is this election another benchmark that builds on the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, who was disenfranchised despite their best efforts at the Atlantic City Convention in, I believe, 64. Is this about building on the original Black Panther Party, which was an electoral vehicle in Loudoun County in the South, The fact that I even go back to my own experience of trying to help register folks to vote in Utah, Alabama, What I saw there and experienced as a perhaps somewhat jaded northerner was that the vote was clearly, it was written in blood. We didn't just need the Edmund Pettus Bridge experience and the tragedy of John Lewis and his cohorts to understand that, but is this really part of your efforts, the efforts of groups like Black Voters Matter Fund and the efforts that we see in Jackson, Mississippi? Is this building on those valiant and critical efforts of the ancestors, if you will, who really fought for the right to vote and it was inscribed with their blood?
Yeah, that's an incredible question. Thank you for asking that, because, you know, we actually view our work as being part of that same legacy. I and a group of others in Selma, Dallas County, we actually, in the year 2006, we created a third party in Alabama using the exact same laws that were on the books when SNCC and the Lowndes County Freedom Organization got together to create that third party effort. And so, you know, we very much at Black Voters Matter view our work as being part of that same legacy, not in the sense of, you know, you asked if this election was part of that legacy. I wouldn't say necessarily that this election or this candidacy of Joe Biden is a part of that legacy, but the process that we've used to get these results, right, this process of having our community fundamentally rethink our relationship to power, right, of building relationships across counties, across cities, across states, across an entire region, you know, this sense of, like, funding some of these local groups, right, and providing the economic resources we need to exert our political will. Like, that process, that relationship building, we very much believe is a part of that same legacy of Lowndes County Freedom Organization, sometimes known as the Black Panther Party in Alabama or the Mississippi Freedom Democrats, because at the end of the day, we've got to view that we control our institutions, our ecosystem, our financial resources can control our political destinies, right? And so this process that we're doing, it could go in any number of ways, right? But the main thing is that if whatever direction we're going to go to, whatever our path to liberation is going to be, what we know is that we need independent institutions. We need to be connected to one another, right? We need to have financial resources. We need to fundamentally believe that we have the power to control our destinies. Those ingredients, which are key ingredients to our work, we believe are also key ingredients to everything that Fannie Lou Hamer and Mississippi Freedom Democrats did and SNCC and Lowndes County. Those definitely, this work that we're doing, we definitely view as being a part of that legacy. That's why we take it so seriously. That's why we think it's so important that we be so unapologetically Black. That's why we think it's so important that all of our strategies are grounded in the experiences of those previous organizations. At the end of the day, we are just a chapter, or maybe not even a whole chapter, but just a page in a much larger story. And so we know that, you know, we view it much the way Frantz Fanon said, that every generation must, out of relative obscurity, identify its generational challenge and either fulfill it or betray it. We believe in this moment that this is our generational challenge and this is our contribution to those previous efforts towards independent power building and independent politics, and that there are going to be others that are going to come later on and take what we do and move it further. But we definitely view ourselves as being a part of that longer narrative.
And I wonder if you would just take us through blowing the horn and doing the shout-out that was historically deserved and not always given. You said Black women were not just the voters, and I shouldn't say not just voters, given the whole history of suppression, etc., and people risked their lives to vote, but they were the movers and shakers. They were the avant-garde that really built towards this form of Black power.
Right. Yeah. No. We're very serious about that in identifying. You know, it's one of our five core beliefs. Is that we believe for Black Voters to Matter that we've got to elevate and amplify, you know, the role and invest in the roles of women as voters as well as strategic leaders. And so we try to live that in the ways that we do our work. We try to live it in terms of, you know, how we even staff our organization, in terms of the types of organizations that we partner with and the way that we help amplify stories. Because that's a big part of our contribution as an organization. We help to amplify the work of local organizations, and so we're very intentional about lifting up the work that Black women are doing in this particular time period. We're also, though, at the same time, very, very much about making sure that there's not a narrative that's created in lifting up Black women that we minimalize or marginalize Black men, or we act like Black men are problematic. You know, as you mentioned earlier on, when you talk about those numbers of 18% of Black men, you know, who appears may have voted for Trump. At the end of the day, when you got 82% that are voting for Biden, Democratic candidate, or whoever it is, that's still second only to black women. You know, so that's not chump change, right, that we're talking about. That's not a small contribution that we're talking about. And so we're intentional about the ways that we lift up black women and amplify black women, acknowledge that, and seek to correct the historic problems, right? Because this isn't just even a current day issue of not recognizing black women enough. This is something that goes back to the civil rights movement and even further than that, in terms of, you know, have you had women, you know, I always talk about the Montgomery bus boycott, and we associate Dr. King with it so much, but at the end of the day, without a sister named Joanne Robinson, there never would have been a Montgomery bus boycott. Sister Joanne Robinson went to the black ministers, the male ministers, on several occasions before it started and asked them to support it, and they wouldn't. And so she and a couple of her students went to her office and started making hand copies, right? We didn't have Kinko's, or we didn't have, you know, these big copy machines or whatever, but they went and hand copied the flyers that became the flyers that started what was supposed to be a one-day bus boycott. And so, you know, so this marginalization and undervaluing of the roles of black women goes back further. We could even go back, you know, obviously we talk about this being the 100th anniversary of the suffragist movement and women getting the right to vote. That didn't include black women, in spite of the work that they had done for decades on that movement. And so, you know, I'm honored to be a part of this current movement, which is seeking to correct some of that historical wrong, and it's a challenge sometimes to try to compensate for what's taking place in the class and what continues to take place, but it's something that's necessary, because until we get truth in the ways that we acknowledge the work that's being done, and until we properly invest in the folks that are doing this work and leading this work, then we can't really get to where we're trying to get to. One of our organizations that I came up through, Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, you know, used to always say, revolution without women ain't happening. And that's certainly the case today. When we work together, we win.
Cliff Albright, co-founder of Black Voters Matters Fund, thank you so much for joining us.
You've been listening to Building Bridges, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Stay strong and stay well.